In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for hour number two for Tuesday, November 16th, 2010. On Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, my thanks to Dov Zakheim, my guest in hour number one of the program on Pentagon Solutions, and you can hear my conversation with him archived later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Immigration policy and operations at the Department of Homeland Security on the table for hour number two of the program, and my guest is the president of INC Solutions, Julie Myers-Wood, the former head of ICE. Welcome. It's nice to see you again.
Oh, great to see you, Francis.
Thank you. I'm glad you made it through the rain. I hope you found a close parking space.
So I did.
Good
blissfully.
Deal.
Thank you.
Lot on the table as far as immigration policy, transportation security. We talked before we went on the air about the union vote at TSA for the baggage screeners. We have the Don't Touch My Junk guy who has become somewhat of an internet celebrity all of a sudden. For good reasons or for bad. And there's just a lot happening. Before we get into the specifics, is that normal, or is there some kind of alignment of the planets or something like that that's causing people to be more focused on these issues right now, do you think?
Well, I think it is normal in that the last 2 years of a presidency, for all the new policies and all the new things that have been done, you start digging into what's exactly happened. Mm-hmm. And the honeymoon's worn off. And so here we have a honeymoon that's worn off and a historic transformation of Congress. And so a lot of eyes are on DHS and what's going on. And mm-hmm. agencies like TSA and ICE are agencies that don't have a long institutional history. And so there are a lot of things that are improving every day that gives Congress and the public a lot of room to criticize.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the changes in Congress, and the new members are on the Hill on both sides of the aisle being going through their instructions and learning how things work and where to find the men's and ladies' rooms and all those important things. What changes do you foresee inside DHS because of the way that the agency will now be overseen? Obviously, there'll be a new chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee. Peter King will take the gavel from Benny Thompson. Congressman King talked to one of my colleagues not long ago about some of the changes or priorities that he'll have in the new Congress as far as oversight goes and so forth. But one thing that people have been concerned about is just the sheer number of committees. You experienced it when you were at ICE. Somebody always wanted a piece of your time on the Hill. What kind of impact do you think the changes will have, the way Congress will be restructured, not just on the House side, but the new mix in the Senate, too, and new composition of committees and so on?
Well, it's interesting. I think the major players on immigration have not really changed. So there weren't a lot of major players that have been voted out. Some have more power now, like Peter King, like Lamar Smith, Steve King from Iowa. Some have less power, but they're still there in Congress. Mm-hmm. I think from an agency perspective, both at ICE and DHS, they're going to be spending a lot of time going up to the Hill, responding to requests for information, answering subpoenas, perhaps, and, you know, briefing member after member on all the things that went on. Mm-hmm. The Republican minority on the House side was very frustrated over the last couple of years based on information they thought they were not able to get from DHS. Well, that's changing now. Mm-hmm. The House, the Republicans have the power of the subpoena, and I think they are going to be willing to use that if ICE and DHS don't work cooperatively, which I think they want to.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just say, that's awfully draining for an agency, no matter who's in charge, to have all these congressional requests.
Mm-hmm.
I think about the Clinton White House, which set up at one time in their White House counsel's office a whole separate team of lawyers just to respond to congressional and other investigations.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what the executive branch needs, DHS and ICE. They don't have that ability to do that.
Yeah.
And so the same people who are the subject matter experts who are dependent on to make sure removals continue, that the great investigations continued, those same people are also going to be answering congressional information requests, going to be up on the Hill like Alan Burson and John Pistol are today.
Mm-hmm.
And arguably, that takes away a lot of time from the core mission of the agency, just answering to all these committees and all these individuals that want information.
The last count that I heard was in the upper 80s, a number of committees and subcommittees that have jurisdiction on the Department of Homeland Security. At some point, it would seem logical for somebody to say, wait a minute, these people, as you mentioned, Mr. Pistol and Mr. Burson, that are on the Hill today, they have jobs to do. Julie Myers Wood is the head of ICE, has immigration issues to worry about. Not that testifying to Congress isn't important, but testifying to 80-some committees doesn't necessarily seem like a good use of time for these principles, as you're talking about. It seems logical at some point somebody would say, okay, we got to figure out how to lop some of this off.
It absolutely would be logical, and frankly, it would also save the Congress a lot of money if they had more kind of streamlined efficiencies and reduce the number of oversight committees. The problem is I don't think there's an incentive for current members of either party to push for this kind of streamlining, mm-hmm. because each subcommittee chair who thinks they have some area of oversight of DHS sees that of an area of control, an area they can influence, possibly for very good reasons, because they care very much about these issues. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's going to take kind of some larger event or outside commission or somebody else to reduce congressional oversight. And it's not something which is going to inherently come about, despite all the advocacy in the past administration, I think in this administration, to reduce that oversight.
Yeah, it's interesting that this administration has not been so vocal about it, but they certainly have, whenever they've had an opportunity, they've kind of made comments that are very easy to read between the lines to say, hey, wait a minute, we're spending an awful lot of time submitting to oversight, and we've got a country to keep safe over here.
That's exactly right. And I also think previously, when the Democrats controlled the House, they may have been more willing to allow for substitute witnesses. You know, if Mr. Pistol's not available, they say, that's fine, we'll have a substitute. Query now whether the Republicans are going to be just as willing to do so. In my experience, when the opposing party controls the Congress, they may not be. And that'll be tough on the agency and on DHS.
Mm-hmm. What's the most important thing that you think ICE is dealing with right now? I know there's a million things, and I know it's maybe hard to choose one out of the hat. But if there's one issue that they're dealing with, either policy-wise or execution-wise, what do you think is the toughest thing right now?
I think the toughest thing for ICE, as well as for all of DHS, is looking at vulnerabilities in the immigration and customs arena that ICE has control over, and making sure that we stay ahead of the criminals and the terrorists that are really trying to attack our system, and looking at how creative they're getting, mm-hmm. and staying on top of that, and really making sure we're addressing that in a holistic way.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really tough job. We see that on TSA, as they change their procedures. Those who want to harm our country change their methods. And so you're always trying to stay one step ahead. And boy, that's a huge, tremendous challenge.
What do you make of all the controversy about TSA, especially the screening machines and all of that business? And I mentioned the don't touch my junk guy, and details about that at federalnewsradio.com. I mean, that's kind of crazy sounding, and it's causing a lot of controversy just because the nature of the comments, but the sentiment of the person involved who didn't want to go through one of the new screening machines and didn't want to go through what seems to be a very aggressive, shall we say, personal screening method, pat down. That's not an uncommon sentiment when you just talk to people in the street. There are a lot of people who are a little iffy about that whole deal.
Well, nobody thinks that it's a pleasant experience to go through screening at any time, or go to the dentist, or go to a lot of things. I think TSA has an incredibly tough job, and I know that they have tried to model some of their security procedures to better address vulnerabilities. A fair question that I think is being asked, you know, put aside kind of the silliness of some of the videos, is, are these new procedures working? Are they really attacking the vulnerabilities, or are they not? And when you see pictures on Drudge of nuns being screened really rigorously, that's what I think causes some Americans to question whether or not things can be done better. But it's tough. I think it made me think, boy, it's such a tough job, and I'm glad somebody like John Pistol is there to address it.
Julie Myers Wood of INC Solutions is my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, focusing on DHS and immigration and policy in hour number two of the program today. We'll be back in just a moment.
Some of the critical transportation challenges facing the U.S. How is the Research and Innovative Technology Administration, or RITA, advancing an intelligent transportation system? What is IntelliDrive, and what role does technology play in making our transportation system safe, secure, and efficient? Join host Michael Keegan next week for an encore presentation of the Business of Government Hour's conversation with Peter Apple, Administrator of the Research and Innovative Technology Administration within the U.S. Department of Transportation.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Ever notice how some government HR managers always seem to know the latest employment trends and data? Always seem to find the right candidates with the right skills? Don't get beat by them. Join them. Visit MonsterGovernmentSolutions.com. You can tap into the latest innovations, hear from experts, and see how others are implementing hiring reform. MonsterGovernmentSolutions.com. Everything you need to hire and retain a highly talented workforce.
Monster Government Solutions has always focused on one mission, to help people improve their lives. Today, innovation is driving that mission like never before. Monster has launched unequaled game-changing technology that will redefine the way seekers and employers search, connect, and plan. Monster Government Solutions works with federal agencies right here in Washington to deliver the talent they need to thrive. Visit MonsterGovernmentSolutions.com to join the Monster Government Solutions community. Get the Monster Advantage. The Internet is more than just a technology. It's a domain, similar to the domains of land, air, sea, and space, but with its own distinct challenges. The cyber domain has national and international dimensions that include industry, trade, intellectual property, security, technology, culture, policy, and diplomacy. It includes all parts of the converged network, from computer networks to satellite communications, and is not bound by international borders. How can the United States shape the global cyber landscape to promote U.S. economic interests and develop a cyber domain that considers transparency, accessibility, security, and privacy? Listen to Cyber 2020, The Future of the Internet, as part of the Booz Allen Hamilton Expert Voices Panel Series, moderated by Executive Vice President Mike McConnell and featuring top government and commercial experts, November 17th at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen, or visit boozallen.com/expert. Voices.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. Better, faster, cheaper. You're probably sick of those words already, right? Well, many state and local governments have been working to be better, faster, and do things more efficiently for years now. And we're going to tap their lessons. And the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, they're meeting today. An update on what they decide about your TSP this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Julie Myers Wood, the former head of ICE and now president of INC Solutions. And you can find out more about her and the company at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. We were talking at the end of the last segment about the screening process and some of the controversy we've seen in the media over it. One of the things, you mentioned the picture that has been circulated online of the nun being screened, and it leads me to the question, the reaction most people have, the visceral reaction is, well, she doesn't look like a terrorist. So, well, that begs the question of what a terrorist looks like. And if there's one thing that I think we've learned, particularly in Iraq, but also in Afghanistan, as we see, I saw a news story the other day that the Taliban is making a concerted effort to steal U.S. uniforms, and Pentagon policies changed on how uniforms are to be handled and to be provided to service members in Afghanistan because of that.
if we learn anything from any of that, it should be that we have to take our ideas of what a terrorist looks like or what a drug runner looks like or what any people look like and really just throw it out the window. And it's unfortunate that that's the world that we live in, but it seems to me that's the world that we live in, and we kind of have to deal with that. So then the question becomes how we deal with that. Do you think that, do I have it right, or am I missing something there, do you think?
You're absolutely on the right track. I think individuals that want to do harm to their country think, how can I make my profile as low as possible?
Mm-hmm.
And that changes over time. Initially, if you think about some of the individuals that attacked our country on 9/11, they were in using visa fraud, doing various things with their visas. Well, ICE and other agencies got a lot tighter on visa fraud, so now we see the terrorists recruiting Americans, Americans who are born here as well as naturalized Americans.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same thing when you think about terrorists more generally. If individuals are trying to sneak things through the airport, they're thinking, how can I not be noticed? You know, do I wrap something to a baby? Do I make myself look infirm? Do I wear a law enforcement uniform? Do I dress like a nun? And so I think that we need TSA and other law enforcement that's at airports to be paying attention and really kind of focusing on where there could be a vulnerability and not assuming just the way, because if someone looks a certain way, that they're not a threat.
Mm-hmm.
I think a broader question, though, that some Americans are concerned about is, do the pat-downs work at all? Or have the terrorists, frankly, moved beyond pat-downs, as we've seen in the toner and the cargo security incident and other things? And should TSA be thinking beyond pat-downs to the next vulnerability?
They're literally trying to mail the bombs in.
That's right.
I mean, that's really what it's boiled down to. They're mailing it in.
That's right, and looking for the most innocuous thing. And so when you think about ink toner, you know, that is something that's very innocuous to most individuals, to cargo companies. And so I think that shows how significant the threat is.
And the first thing that happened was the shipping companies all cut off shipments from Yemen. Well, okay, that's great. So the next step is if we're the bad guys, we just won't ship anything from Yemen anymore. We'll find somebody that's in Germany and I'm not picking on Germany, but we'll find somebody that's in a country that seemingly would not be adversarial to the United States, and we'll base our operations there. I mean, there's cells all over the world.
That's right. Trying to find kind of transit points, other ways to kind of sneak items in. And I do think the cargo companies kind of have it really hard. You know, they've done a lot of things to strengthen their procedures in terms of shipments to and from high-risk countries. You know, some of them require all shipments to and from very high-risk countries to be pre-approved, for example. So you have to know who it's coming from. It can't be from some random individual.
Yeah.
But I think it's a very, very tough thing. And obviously, the lives of their pilots are at risk as well when things are sent on those planes.
All right. So this is a philosophical question and not an operational question. I'm not going to ask you to give away any secrets. When you are trying to strategize against an opponent that essentially is conducting, I mean, it's a whack-a-mole game. You're trying to hit the mole that pops his head up instead of the ones that haven't popped their heads up. How do you strategize? How do you think like the bad guys to try to anticipate where the next potential threat might come from?
Well, you have to understand kind of their operations. And if you think about what the United States did in fighting Italian organized crime, for example, they really tried to understand how these families operated. And then they looked to see what kind of informants and information can we get inside the family and how can we bring cases.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to think the same way kind of about the terrorists. How do they operate and how could we get kind of good information? And unfortunately, some of the casualties we've seen over the last, year or so have been when the CIA or other agencies have been trying to get good information from those on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
But that information is absolutely critical. We can't depend solely on analysts sitting at their desk. We have to have people that sometimes are involved, not the priests and the nuns, but kind of the bad guys who are working in these organizations to flip and give us information and then look to see, can we get beyond whack-a-mole?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a terrible place to be if you think we're just at whack-a-mole in terms of kind of fighting the vulnerabilities.
But is that an unfair characterization on my part, do you think?
I think it's fair to say that the terrorist operations have continued to shift and we've continued to shift to attack it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the U.S. has tried to develop broader strategies, both in the prior administration and this one, that go well beyond whack-a-mole. You know, and we have whether or not they've been kind of fully successful, that's a different debate.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the government has tried to think more broadly, has tried to do information sharing more widely, so we're not simply in a position of catching everyone right as they get on the plane or depending on foreign governments to give us information about individuals.
All right, let's talk about a couple of different aspects of information sharing when we come back from the break, because there are, that discussion in and of itself has a number of different facets. We'll do that with Julie Myers-Wood when I come back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. A House Ethics Committee has found Congressman Charlie Rangel guilty of violating House rules. The subcommittee found the New York Democrat guilty of 11 out of 13 charges. He could face penalties ranging from a huge fine to expulsion from Congress. About 9,000 more ballots are expected to be counted in Alaska's Senate race today. Yesterday, write-in candidate Lisa Murkowski led Republican Joe Miller by about 1,700 votes, including a number of ballots that are being challenged. Here's NBC's Kristen Welker.
If at the end of this counting process, Miller can't catch up to Murkowski, even if he gets all of those disputed ballots thrown out, he's going to have a really tough time.
It's a tough time on Wall Street today. The Dow fell more than 200 points in early going. The losses come amid concern about the debt situation in China and Europe. And if you're planning to travel for the Thanksgiving holiday, you won't be alone. AAA expects the number of Americans getting away to increase by 11.4% from last year. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
The 6 geese a-laying are $249. With tax, your total is $261.58.
But I'm using my store charge. Shouldn't it be less?
I'm sorry, but your store charge doesn't entitle you to any additional savings on geese.
Even geese a-laying?
Any kind of geese, ma'am.
For holiday shopping without the hassles, come to Kohl's instead, where you can save up to an extra 30% on everything you really want with no exclusions when you open or use your Kohl's charge this Tuesday and Wednesday at Kohl's 2-Day Sale. The more you know, the more you Kohl's. Kohl's. Expect great things.
Good news, ladies. Ugly brown spots on your skin might feel like they're the end of the world, but they're not. You can fade those brown spots from view with Dr. Perry's Night Skin Cream. New customers can try Night Skin Free. Diminish the appearance of brown spots on your face, neck, and hands. Try Night Skin Free. Call 1-800-509-4152. Pay only shipping and handling. One per household. Call for your free Night Skin. Call 1-800-509-4152. That's 1-800-509-4152.
HalfPriceDC.com. Half Price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, spas, and more.
This week, buy Half Price gift certificates to Studio 355 Hair and Day Spa. Award-winning stylists combine cutting-edge style with relaxation.
Saki Japanese Steakhouse in Laurel, specializing in Japanese cuisine and hibachi dinners, providing exceptional customer service and a wonderful dining experience. The Grilled Jamaican Eatery, savor a taste of the tropics.
See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
Leading the way to better vision, United Healthcare Vision understands the importance of good eyesight for you and your family. That's why their vision programs offer federal enrollees and their families a convenient mix of independent and retail providers and industry-leading benefits for glasses, contacts, and discounts on LASIK procedures. United Healthcare Vision is the clear choice. In fact, 9 out of 10 United Healthcare Vision Fed VIP members would recommend their plan to family and friends. The Fed VIP open season period for federal employees and retirees runs through December 13th. Don't miss out on this opportunity to protect your most precious gift, the gift of sight. For more information about their benefit plans and how to enroll, visit United Healthcare Vision at myuhcvision.com/fedvip. That's myuhcvision.com/fedvip. If you want industry-leading vision benefits and a convenient provider network, look no further than United Healthcare. This open season.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
It's the latest innovation by drug traffickers. U.S. prosecutors say South American gangs are buying old jets and other planes and filling them with cocaine and flying them more than 3,000 miles across the ocean to Africa. At least three gangs have struck deals to fly drugs to West Africa and from there to Europe. Most of the cocaine flown to Africa is bound for Europe, where the demand has been rising over the last decade. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a lot of talk about thinking outside the box. But what about thinking inside the box? Airink is a company that looks at every angle when solving problems. In fact, Air Inc. recently helped convert regular cargo containers into sophisticated air traffic and communications control facilities for use abroad, combining the shipping box and actual equipment into one turnkey system. Imagine that. Log on to www.arinc.com to learn more.
Concrete, the most widely used building material in the world, inevitably cracks over time. So engineers are working on a concrete that heals itself. Concrete is made by mixing cement, water, sand, and rocks. M.R. Hansen, a South Dakota School of Mines and Technology civil engineering professor, wants to alter that mixture a bit, replacing some of the sand with a porous material that absorbs and stores water and keeping in bigger particles of cement.
The main thing is don't grind it quite as fine, and we can control that.
A final touch might be
some additive to the water that would make it travel through the cracks more easily.
Then when a crack occurs, the stored water would leak out, activating unused cement in those larger particles to seal the cracks. It could not only restore structural strength, but save time, money, and materials. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Connect with more than 800 fellow contract management professionals. The Government Contract Management Conference is a must-attend on December 9th and 10th. The National Contract Management Association presents more than 20 educational sessions to answer the most complex questions, plus prominent speakers from CACI, the Department of Defense, the Boeing Company, and more. To learn more, visit ncmahq.org today.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Julie Myers Wood of Immigration and Customs Solutions, my guest on the program for this hour. And we were talking before the break, Julie, about information sharing. There are a number of challenges that we've talked about that have been well documented when it comes to information sharing, both about terrorists and about just the most basic information. How does it appear to you? What is your experience as far as improvements that are being made both inside DHS among the component agencies and externally with other agencies? And the big challenge has been state and local information sharing, not just about terrorists necessarily, but all kinds of the interrelations that DHS engages with across all of these spectrums.
I think there have been tremendous improvements in information sharing really since 9/11 woke everyone up.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people would say there's a culture within law enforcement not to share. You don't want to share your informant because another agency may blow that informant, mm-hmm. or may, cause a problem. And I think after 9/11, the government really recognized you can't do that. That's not an effective way to work. And if you have all these procedures that discourage people from sharing or methods that make it hard for people to share, it's going to be hard to keep our country safe. And so based on that, I think DOJ and DHS have worked very hard over the last couple of years to make information sharing more routinized and make sure that information is kind of coming back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
State and local adds another layer of complexity. I think the Bush administration was really committed to the fusion centers, really started with the lead of Charlie Allen at DHS and others, and the Obama administration has continued the push on the fusion centers. Some fusion centers are very effective. Others have 26 desks in them,
yeah.
and are not a place where true information sharing occurs. And so I think that this administration needs to continue the push to make sure that we don't just have buildings where people talk about sharing, but that we actually do have a flow of information, that we protect it, that we share it in a timely manner, and that we make sure that we act upon it where appropriate.
But you like the structure that's in place and would like to see it fleshed out a little bit more. It's what it sounds like.
That's exactly right. I think both the fusion centers and then on the law enforcement side, there's some specific law enforcement to law enforcement sharing that DHS and DOJ do, which I think is working pretty well and making sure that we have information that we need and that they have information that they need as well.
The other type of information sharing I want to talk about is the, I guess, internal to external, and that's kind of, I think, well codified in a story from KTVU, a television station in Northern California, from about a week ago. This story says federal immigration officials have rejected calls by San Francisco and Santa Clara counties to opt out of a controversial program that shares the fingerprints of arrestees with your former agency, ICE, according to representatives for both counties. David Venturella, director of ICE's Secure Communities Program, informed representatives from both counties during meetings that the program would move forward. And information sharing seems to be the crux of this problem. These counties claim that they were told that they could opt out of this fingerprint sharing program. Mr. Venturella, as I just read, saying that that's not the case, and there's some confusion here on the part of somebody as to what they can and can't do according to ICE policy. What's your sense of, not necessarily this particular incident, but in general, how the agency, your former agency and DHS in general, is interacting with these state and local jurisdictions as far as making sure that they understand what they can do, what they can't do, in some cases, what they have to do?
Well, Secure Communities is a program that I started when I was at ICE. We really wanted to focus more on criminal aliens, but it was really in its infancy when the Obama administration took over. And I think they were then looking at this program and the information sharing that it does with criminal aliens and trying to decide how do they want to market this program and what sort of message do they want to send. And I think the story that you cite is an example of where maybe the message was unclear at first and there were some hints that counties could opt out. In reality, the information that they're talking about sharing here are the fingerprints that those counties already share with the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI shares those with ICE. The only way for those counties to opt out is for the counties to refuse to share the fingerprints with the FBI. What would that cause? Well, that would cause them not to know whether or not there are wanted warrants out on a particular individual, whether or not the person they arrested for shoplifting is a mass murderer or somebody that's wanted in a very serious crime. So I would think that no rational county would want to do that with respect to the FBI. Given ICE's relationship with the FBI, the counties aren't in a position to say no. Mm-hmm. And so I do think your point about what was the message, did counties have kind of the right information early on, is a good one. And mm-hmm. I think part of it, frankly, was just the Obama administration struggling with, here's this program. It looks like it has some good things. How do we make it our own, and how do we deliver the message more broadly? And it looks like there may have been a few kind of crossed wires or crossed mm-hmm. signals on that earlier on.
Yeah, because it doesn't sound like there's a political element here necessarily, at least at the state level. This story says in May that Attorney General, now Governor Jerry Brown, wrote, I believe that working with the federal government in this matter advances important and legitimate law enforcement objectives. And I don't think anybody could misconstrue Governor Brown as somebody who was particularly favorable to real stringent efforts on by an administration, say the Bush administration, ideologically polar opposite.
Right. This program, and when it was conceived, was a program that was embraced kind of by Republicans and Democrats alike. It's now come under more criticism. You mentioned that the article calls it the controversial program
mm-hmm.
because some individuals who are arrested for crimes maybe do not have an extensive criminal history. And so immigration advocates and others sometimes find that this program actually identifies individuals who have not been convicted of very serious crimes to date, even though they were then being encountered by a county system for some sort of a crime or traffic offense.
We'll link up this news story so that you can read more about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The headline is, local officials say ICE rejects request to opt out of controversial program. It's about a week or so ago that series of events took place. My guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM is Julie Myers Wood of Immigration and Customs Solutions, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Today's Emergency Preparedness Series is brought to you by the D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency.
There's growing confusion over a federal program designed to identify illegal immigrants. So far, hundreds of counties and cities, including many right here, are participating in Secure Communities. If you're arrested, your fingerprints are automatically sent to Homeland Security. If it turns out you're here illegally, you could be deported. But many local officials say they were told the program was voluntary, and now they're being told it'll be mandatory by 2013.
I'm Mark Seagraves.
Did you know that more than 3,000 people die in home fires each year in the U.S.? A working smoke alarm will alert you to danger and could make the difference between life and death. Smoke and heat intensify quickly. Every second counts. If a fire occurs while you and your family are asleep, how will everyone escape? Without a plan, you may not know the best route to safety. Create a family emergency escape plan. Visit 72hours.org to learn how. Remember, get out and stay out.
Americans ask their government to be more efficient, open, innovative, and green. They expect you to help solve the most challenging issues of this generation and do it all while spending less. Yes, the American people expect a great deal from their government. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help you stay on top of any challenge and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider with Chris Dorabeck, weekday afternoons 3 to 7.
Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey.
The beauty of the federal health plan has always been it doesn't discriminate because of age, sex, race, retirement status, right, unlike the private sector. So it is the best program in America for health people, and now is the open season. And also people can look at changing their optional dental and their optional vision insurance.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Dorabeck Insider. The Dorabeck Insider, hosted by award-winning journalist and free thinker Chris Dorabeck. Engage your mind every afternoon from 3 to 7 as Chris engages the best minds in federal procurement, management, IT, and human resources. The Dorabeck Insider takes on subjects critical for an efficient government. Chris's guests answer the questions you want answered. Tune in to hear how the news shapes your daily interactions in the federal space. The Dorabeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Julie Myers Wood of INC Solutions is my guest for the hour, the former head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. We were talking about this policy that a couple of counties in California want to opt out of, and found out that they're now not able to do so. And we'll see what the ramifications of that are. Sometimes some of these jurisdictions can be, I guess, a little cantankerous when it comes to conforming with things that they would prefer not to do. What's the recourse in that situation? Let's say that San Francisco County and Santa Clara County say, you know what, forget it. We're just not going to do it, and we don't care if you tell us that we have to do it. We're just not going to do it.
Well, if the federal government decided then that the FBI would no longer accept the fingerprints, for example, then those counties would kind of be on their own. They would have no idea if individuals they are arresting had other criminal activity. I think what you'll also see in this Republican Congress is you could see the House looking at whether or not the provisions of law which prevent sanctuary cities are really applicable here, and whether there's some targeted actions that they could take against those counties to affect federal funds. In the past, that hasn't been successful, but there hasn't been anything as direct as this. And it would take the counties to say, we're not going to give the FBI the fingerprints, which is pretty significant. Because if they give them to the FBI is going to share them with ICE, and then ICE will act on its own independently.
Mm-hmm.
So the counties would have to take a pretty significant step to stop sharing that information. And I think, boy, the citizens in those counties would have to be worried about, you know, what kind of individuals are we letting free or possibly sending back out in the community that could have serious kinds of criminal crimes.
It was interesting to me to follow the debate on the immigration law in Arizona, because one of the things that people, some of the news stories that I saw come out of that, you know, 2 or 3 months after the law passed and started to be enforced in the areas where it was enforced, that wasn't uniform across the state of Arizona. But people, some of the news stories that came out of their set were saying the amount of illegal aliens in the state had gone down precipitously. And the news stories and the media coverage seemed to be rather incredulous as, wow, we can't believe this is happening. And I thought, well, that kind of was the point of the legislation, was to be the opposite, I guess, of the sanctuary areas that you refer to.
That's exactly right. SB 1070 was designed to have attrition through enforcement. And they actually had that in kind of the header of the bill, saying our philosophy is if we adopt these very, very strong procedures, that that will discourage illegal aliens from entering our state and from doing things that are prohibited by law in our state. It'll be very interesting to see what the Ninth Circuit says about this law. The arguments, of course, which were held recently, several of the judges expressed a little skepticism that the federal government could really shut down SB 1070 in the way that the federal government has tried to do. But you're absolutely right when you think about what are the incentives and what are the incentives that the federal government can do to discourage illegal immigration and encourage legal immigration, to encourage people that we want to come to our country to do productive things, to find an easier way to get here, to have longer waits, you know, less delays, less confusion.
I will say that I'm struck by the way that a lot of people in Arizona were portrayed as anti-immigration, and that distinction wasn't made, and I think that's unfortunate. From the agency's perspective, from DHS's perspective, what would they have to do? The people in Arizona who supported this legislation, and the people in Utah who are working on a different form, they expect theirs to look a lot different than Arizona's. But people who support these kinds of legislation at the state level, the first thing they always say is, if the federal government had a different policy or were enforcing policy, we wouldn't need to do these things, but we have to do this because they're not doing their job. From your view as former head of this agency, what does your former agency or the other component agencies at DHS, what do they need to do so that these states don't have to do this anymore?
I think Congress has to fund the agencies in a radically different way to keep states from feeling like not enough is being done. So what Arizona wants to happen is for ICE to have kind of a monumental presence and to have true federal enforcement so they won't have to act.
But is that realistic? Is that possible?
I actually don't think, unfortunately, I don't think it's realistic. What can happen if a law like Arizona's were to be in effect, what it does then, though, is puts on ICE and other agencies an unfunded mandate. In a lot of instances, it asks ICE to take custody of these individuals, to put them through immigration court, to deport them, to send them home. You know, ICE can say no, though. And that's one thing that didn't come up in the federal arguments very much when the federal government, DOJ, was trying to shut down the law, is the ability of ICE to say no, and the fact that ICE says no all the time now, unfortunately, because of resources.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have enough people in the state of Arizona to manage all the demand that's coming in. And so, you know, I do think it's tough. The states are frustrated. The feds are frustrated. I know ICE agents want to do as much as they can so states wouldn't have to act on their own. But Congress has not given the agency or DHS as a whole enough resources. And, you know, I don't see Congress moving towards giving them substantial enough resources to do that in the near future.
My brother lives in Tempe, and he has said that they're just now figuring out that ICE doesn't always say yes, and so these local jurisdictions are finding themselves in custody of folks that they didn't think they were going to have custody of for long periods of time, and that's costing a lot of money. And if there's one thing we know about what's going on financially at state and local level, it's that nobody has any money. Nobody has any extra money to feed and house and clothe people that are in custody that they didn't expect to have in custody.
And let me be clear, that ICE does not like to say no.
Right.
But, you know, in my home state of Kansas, you know, there were less than 20 agents in the whole state. And, you know, that number of agents cannot possibly do all the customs and immigration investigations, much less respond to all the roadside stops.
Mm-hmm.
And so I certainly feel for your relatives and what they're experiencing. It is a tough problem, and Congress needs to look more broadly at immigration reform.
And that kind of folds into the discussion that we had a little bit earlier about how Congress will work with now that they've been reshaped and some different priorities. And this conversation's archived in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. If you missed that part of my conversation with Julie Myers Wood, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the workforce at some of the component agencies, including your former agency, when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Ever notice how some government HR managers always seem to know the latest employment trends and data? Always seem to find the right candidates with the right skills? Don't get beat by them. Join them. Visit MonsterGovernmentSolutions.com.
You can tap into the latest innovations, hear from experts, and see how others are implementing hiring reform. MonsterGovernmentSolutions.com. Everything you need to hire and retain a highly talented workforce.
Monster Government Solutions has always focused on one mission, to help people improve their lives. Today, innovation is driving that mission like never before. Monster has launched unequaled game-changing technology that will redefine the way seekers and employers search, connect, and plan. Monster Government Solutions works with federal agencies right here in Washington to deliver the talent they need to thrive. Visit MonsterGovernmentSolutions.com to join the Monster Government Solutions community. Get the Monster Advantage.
HalfPriceDC.com. Half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, spas, and more.
This week, buy half-price gift certificates to Studio 355 Hair and Day Spa. Award-winning stylists combine cutting-edge style with relaxation.
Saki Japanese Steakhouse in Laurel, specializing in Japanese cuisine and hibachi dinners, providing exceptional customer service and a wonderful dining experience. The Grilled Jamaican Eatery, savor a taste of the tropics.
See all the offers at halfpricedc.com.
What are some of the critical transportation challenges facing the U.S.? How is the Research and Innovative Technology Administration, or RITA, advancing an intelligent transportation system? What is IntelliDrive, and what role does technology play in making our transportation system safe, secure, and efficient? Join host Michael Keegan next week for an encore presentation of the Business of Government Hours conversation with Peter Apple, Administrator of the Research and Innovative Technology Administration within the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Julie Myers Wood, former head of ICE and now president of INC Solutions. And you can find out more about what she's doing now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Mentioned the workforce before we went to the break. We are learning, and there's details at federalnewsradio.com, that TSA screeners there'll be a union vote at TSA whether the screeners want to join a union. There are a lot of workforce issues all over DHS. If I'm a manager at one of the component agencies right now and I'm thinking about my workforce, and not just thinking about it today, but a year from now, 5 years from now, what should I be thinking about developing the kind of workforce that I need, especially in the law enforcement arena?
Well, you want to be thinking about how can I get the best people to come to the agency to be the agency of excellence within DHS and within the government, and then how can I get those folks to stay? It takes a tremendous amount of money and resources to train individuals to be good at what they do, whether it's a screener or a deportation officer or an ICE agent. And how can I keep those people and not let them get lured away into the private sector?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're an agency that either is unionized or may be unionized, think about how can I work productively up front with that agency.
Mm-hmm.
If you are do I put the best leaders in union negotiations? Do I make sure that I talk with the union regularly and don't just wait until negotiations are back up? And
yeah.
How do I engage with them to make it work? And that's going to be tricky if TSA votes to have a union. You know, that'll be a big challenge for folks that are not used to that. And so the managers really need to get on board and see it as the positive thing it could be.
Those of us who care about what is happening in the workforce in the government talk a lot about the hiring process and hiring reform and hiring this and hiring that. Do you think we spend enough time also focusing on the retention element of it, too? Because sometimes it seems to me like so much energy goes to hiring that we forget about keeping the good people.
Well, I think more attention can always be paid to retention and think about keeping the good people. And there was a wave over the last couple of years to talk and give a lot of seminars about the changing workforce and all the expected retirements.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to see if those have actually taken place, given the recession and the other outside factors. Now that the economy is hopefully starting to pick up, there are people who may have other opportunities and may want to leave the federal government. And so as managers, we should think, how can we keep them? And frankly, how can we keep them motivated even if their pay doesn't go up significantly,
mm-hmm.
even if we're not able to give them the same kind of bonus that we gave them in years past?
Yeah.
And how do we make them happy?
Yeah. Julie Myers Wood is president of INC Solutions. It's great to see you again. A terrific discussion as always. You were telling me before we went on the air about something new that your company is developing or coming out with.
Oh, thanks so much, Francis. Yes, my company just launched a new software product at icssecureid.com, and it's a software product which helps employers fight identity fraud. A lot of companies feel like they don't have enough guidance from the government. They can't be document detectives. Our software helps employers in just a few simple minutes with clicks of the button to tell them whether or not a person is committing identity theft.
And that's another element of this conversation that we didn't even have a chance to get into. We didn't talk at all today about E-Verify. We didn't talk at all today about credential security or any of those kind of things, which means you have to come back at some point in the not-too-distant future and do that exact thing. My guest for hour number two of In-Depth today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, Julie Myers Wood, former Assistant Secretary at the Department of Homeland Security for Immigration and Customs Enforcement and now President of INC Solutions. And you can find out more about her and her company at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. That does it for In-Depth today. The Dora Beck Insider is up next. My conversation with Julie and my conversation from hour number one with Dov Zakheim will be archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. A brand new In-Depth with Francis Rose tomorrow. Starting late. We're starting at 1:30 tomorrow until 3 o'clock. The Dora Beck Insider between 3 and 7 this afternoon at Federal News Radio 1500 AM is up next. Thanks for listening.